Show you a quick example of this of our model in action. So filaments represent elastic interactions. These nodes right here are the elements themselves. The system is the cells are basically growing and dividing here. And coming up, you'll see as cells are being removed from the top, cells within the bulk have more of a columnar shape, which you see, it's very common in epithelial sheets. And so with this model, cell shape is an emergent output and not a parameterized input. So we try to incorporate all non-active biomechanics into these interaction potentials, V inter and V intra. So we think of the elements themselves as coarse-grained patches of cytoskeleton. The cytoskeleton is a vast network of biopolymers which give the eukaryotic animal cell structural stability and enable an array of mechanical functions such as division, shape change, motility, and intracellular motion. When considering the interaction between two chunks of cytoskeleton, we came up phenomenologically, we came up with an interaction potential like this. A Morse-type potential which features a close range repulsion for volume exclusion, potential well for elastic coupling, and a short range to allow dynamic separation. We can write down a harmonic approximation for this potential well with spring constant kappa. This becomes important later, I'll show you. And for scaling a single cell, if we have a cell of radius R cell, we can compute the element size for any number of elements N and a packing density. So now, where this linear spring, the elastic coupling between the elements, if you have a N springs, right, you want to make the bulk properties of this the macroscopic properties scale invariant with the number of springs or the number of elements. Yes? It's phenomenological. So pretty much, yeah, so chunks of patches of actin is what we think of. Well, they are elastically coupled, right? If you stretch on actin, they show elastic characteristics. Yes. Yes. Well, the nodes themselves are like cross-linking proteins, and I'll show you how this kind of relates to the actin network. The elements are the nodes. Yes. So we can scale the elasticity between elements as such, and then the viscosity. Basically, the viscosity scales like that because the volume is linearly proportional to the number of elements. So now, before applying this model to multicellular systems, I wanted to validate it using measurements of cell rheology. So on the left are some of the basic quantities used to measure viscoelastic properties in cells, such as stress and strain. Very common, rheologists like to express the mechanical viscoelastic properties of the material with these terms G prime and G double prime. So these are very useful because they, G prime is the storage modulus and G double prime is the loss modulus. This showing elasticity and viscosity. And these are very useful because they give you the fluid and or solid-like properties of a material over any time domain measured. On the right are some of the various ways that experimentalists measure cell rheology. So bulk rheology, magnetic bead cytometry, traction force microscopy, atomic force microscopy, microrheology, and whole cell stretching. So we'll talk about whole cell stretching first. So now when you stretch a cell with low strain over short time scales, what you see is this type of, let me explain what creep is first. So creep is the deformation of a material in response to a constant applied stress. So when you apply a constant stress on a cell, it'll deform and then plateau, the creep will plateau off as though the cell is equilibrated to a finite extension length. And this is for small strains and short time scales. Now, for longer time scales and higher strains, you see that the cell will continue elongating. Now, our model, we see the same type of creep curves for small strains and short time scales. But what happens is that as we increase the stress, the signs of plasticity become apparent, and the network begins to break apart. These are experiments. Yes, and this is the model. It probably does, but it hasn't been investigated very well. So these are culture cells, probably most likely fibroblasts. I can't remember exactly what they had in the papers, but here, I guess you can't really read it. I can give you the site sources for these. So the plasticity becomes very apparent in the elastic modulus. So this is the simulated data, and this is experimental data. So what our cells show is they're hooking materials for small strain, but then as they're strained higher, the elasticity falls off and they basically break apart, shown by this curve where it curves off here. Real cells do show hooking elasticity, but they can be strained to much higher amounts. The time scale? So for this small strain, it's a time scale. So when the creep plateaus off, it's somewhere in here. As for the scaling law, I just wanted to show that the scaling law works pretty well. So red is 64 elements, N is a 256 element cell, and blue is a 1,000 element cell. The clouds and the diagonal line. Okay, so these different measurements, these are all individual measurements for many different equilibrated systems of cells. Yeah. There is a variation between equilibrated systems. So here's an example of cell stretching. Where we have two different system sizes with 256 elements and 1,000 elements. And the stresses applied are relatively similar, and the time scale for which it's applied is the same. And you see the dynamics are nicely conserved. Yes. Yes, it is. The bulk elasticity of cells is usually around. It varies quite a lot. It can be as low as 1 pascal to 10,000 pascals. So it really depends on the cell type. And this is arbitrary. I can change the bulk elastic properties of this. I just set it to. I think this was set so that the bulk properties were 500 pascals of the elastic modulus. So now, if we take a microscopic look, perhaps we get a better idea of what's actually happening inside of the cell. So So let me, it's no better. So the measurements on the left are, well, all these are experimental, but the measurements on the left show rheological measurements for entangled F-actin networks. And basically what they have is you have an actin network, which is the most abundant filament in the eukaryotic cell. And they have this bead embedded in the network. And they apply a constant force to the bead. And what it does is it'll press up against the filaments. And as the filaments start to reptate out of the way, the bead will start to flow through the network. And that's what's shown here. There's an elastic compression, and then it starts to flow. And then when they let go of the force, the elastic energy stored in the network actually pushes the bead back. And so if you look at the loss and storage modulus, the viscosity for short time scales dominates. And then at this intermediate time scale, which corresponds to this little curve right here, G prime, which is the elasticity, dominates. And then over very long time scales, G prime again dominates, and the network is shown to be a fluid. So now, for real cells shown here, it gets more complicated because the actin network has cross-linking proteins. So the cell has a plethora of proteins which are associated with the networks, such as myosin and whatnot. And so what this does is that over the long time scale measurements start to become obscured because the cell is not a passive material. It's an active material, and the cytoskeleton is highly regulated, and cross-linkers are highly regulated. And what is seen is that in the intermediate time regime, G prime and G double prime kind of fall off with like a weak power law, kind of showing that the cell is becoming a weaker and weaker solid. I think that is all. Yeah. So now when we measure G prime, the loss and storage moduli in our network, basically what we do is similar to the experiments. We have a bead embedded in a network. We perturb it with an oscillatory driving force, and we measure the amplitude of the bead trajectory and the phase lag. And you can, for many different driving frequencies, you can map out the loss and storage moduli. Right. Well, I'm not trying to say anything deep. I guess our whole point of going through this exercise is not to learn something more about the cytoskeleton. It's about to make a crude approximation of the cytoskeleton so that we can model multicellular networks, because really we're interested in hundreds to thousands of cells. Long time scale dependence. What the cell actually does on longer time scales, because in multicellular systems, usually interesting things happen on the time scales of hundreds of tens of minutes to hours. Yes, but even that becomes obscured in the measurements, because the cell starts to walk around and move around. You can't really interpret it as a passive material at on those time scales. Is that Boris? That's what I'm getting to. So. Yep. No, it's just, no, not at all. So within this network, basically, so this is this curve right here, this relatively flat line right here is the elasticity over the time scales. and this is the viscosity. So basically what our network shows is that it's solid over long time scales. And basically, you know, this is kind of obvious to us now because there's no reconstruction of the network in this model. So basically, let me give you a summary of cell rheology. So the cell is a watery bag of organelles shrouded in a vast network of semi-flexible polymers. So now, as a passive material, these polymers are interlinked with cross-linkers. So the cell would be a solid. But because there's this polymerization and depolymerization of the cytoskeleton and regulation of cross-linkers, you get the cell behaves more like a fluid on a longer time scale. So, yep. They all experience these filaments are all representations of the filaments. Well, because they on small amplitude deformations, you're not going to have. The elements are all elastically coupled to each other. So there's nothing driving them to reorganize, unlike in the cell cytoskeleton. Only when you pull these things apart do they actually reorganize. Okay, I mean, so. But over long time scales, fluctuations in the systems aren't going to make these things reorganize. Just thermal fluctuations. Or. So I mean, I've done these measurements where instead of using a bead, you just use an element which is also coupled, and basically the effect of the bead is only seen in this intermediate time regime right here. You see the same thing with an element, but you know the curvature of this is kind of different. Nothing? Okay. So, I mean, this made us, this motivated us to try modeling cytoskeletal reconstruction. And so basically what you're seeing here are these elements right here are being pulled. And what's happening is their elements are being depolymerized. Basically, they're just being faded out of the system. And they're being placed somewhere else in the system. Sorry, was there? Okay. And what we see here is, I mean, this is incredibly crude, right? But what we do see, even just with this, is that the network becomes much more fluidic, and it's able to stretch to much higher strains without breaking. Second order Runge-Kutta. Oh, how long does it take? Okay. How long is it? So this simulation might have taken I can't remember because it was quite a long time ago that I did this, but it was a couple of hours on a single processor, yeah. It was actually not done on this machine. So I think that's done. Okay. So now, I guess this kind of concludes my work on single cell rheology, because my supervisor was pushing more towards multicellular systems, since that's what we created the model for. And so I want to use this topic of polymerization and depolymerization to motivate kind of the next frontier of multicellular modeling, where we consider cell migration. So a cell will migrate by depolymerizing material in its back, or deconstructing it and protruding it into the front, polymerizing it there. And so here, this single cell was doing this, and without giving any direction, it will just kind of do a random walk. So now I want to show you this, these are dictyostelium cells in the slug phase, and the reason I'm showing you this is because if you can see the filaments here, what you see is that the filaments are stationary, because the cell is adhering to a surface, and material is basically disappearing in the back, and new material is appearing in the front. So the filaments don't actually move; they're just being destroyed and created. Okay, so now in a multicellular system, we tried to put this out, tried to put this migration algorithm in, and with this, let me tell you the algorithm for movement. So these white cells here, they're actually experiencing a force, okay, and all the cells get their migration vector, their direction that they want to actually move, by mechanotactically. So they're feeling forces around them. They take an average over a period of time, and then they destroy an element. They basically get a front and the back, and they destroy an element in the back and put a new one in the front. And so now, this is what we see. Oh, there we go. So these white speckles, these are actual events of elements being destroyed and created. No lattice. They look like they're packed, because it's in 2D. They're stochastic. So what you see is that I sped it up, and you see that the white cells start to really go through the network, and you see this type of circulation of the cells around them. That kind of ends there. And let me show. Yes. Not to the force field, but the forces that they're felt the force that is being transduced from cell to cell. So basically, a force is being applied. A cell will try to move, and then another cell further away will measure some, its random forces from all around it. It'll measure, the greatest force, and then it'll go in that direction. This was just the initial algorithm that we put. I mean, I've tried this with random movement, and you get the same type of phenotype. So let me show you. So this is the exact system that we just saw, and basically what this is showing is that it's a cruder animation. So basically, these little black dots are the center of masses of the cells, and this blue region of cells are those cells that are being forced, and it's just up in the up direction now. So now, via this migration algorithm. As a passive material, the cell will not reorganize its structure. So because of that, the tissue won't reorganize its structure. Cells will not move will not change neighbors unless you actually tell them deconstruct your part of your material and put it somewhere else. let me, okay. So this is, I mean, that's the, this is the exact same simulation here, and you just see these type of large scale flow. And so now, without migration, this is what you see. So that patch of blue cells is being pushed, and this is the trajectory of those patches of blue cells. And you see that here, you get deformed, but it's just gonna plateau off to a finite deformation. And here, the patch of cells actually really pushes through the network. So with migration, you get fluidization of the tissue, okay? What's nice about this is that if you measure, so you can measure viscosity for this tissue. And depending on the time scale for which these polymerization and depolymerization events occur, you can get different viscosities, bulk viscosities for the tissue. Okay? So there's some data points here. And so so I should say that the polymerization and depolymerization events there, the time scales that those occur, they're just related to the velocity that the cell will move. Okay? And what's neat about this is that all I put in were approximations for a single cell rheology, and I put in a time scale for this process of migration, which are completely, I mean, they're quite physiological, 10 to 100 seconds. And you get a tissue viscosity which is quite comparable to those measured in real tissues. Question? Okay. There's traction, yes. No, so I should have mentioned that so if you have, let me probably, it's just all right around here. So you have these elastic interactions between a single cell and then another cell over here, which also has these elastic couplings, will interact with this cell with similar elastic couplings, but the potential is qualitatively similar, but quantitatively the elasticity coupling is set to what type of measurements we see for cell-cell adhesion. So there are elastic couplings between cells.
And have you studied what is the mathematical form that approximates that group versus accumulation?
What do you mean by your question? The mathematical.
Well, I mean, how does it depend on x and y? Is there a continuous? You have a velocity field. Is there a continuous functional form that would be this good at expressing?
You know, we can see this type of flow for. And then from the Navier-Stokes equations with Stoke flow, but we haven't, we're still actually looking at this type of vortex flow. In fact, this is what we're quite interested in right now.
Okay, so in other words, you can increase the answer,
right? Yeah, yeah.
And the second question I was curious about is, if these cells had a chemotactic response, instead of having an actual force put on them, they will all want it to migrate in the direction that only they could sense.
Right.
Through the rest of the Would you get the same exact behavior, or would it be a little different in some important way?
It actually is a little bit different. So if you and but there it's too. I'm looking at this type of stuff right now, and the results are kind of I don't understand them enough, so I'm not going to present them here. But we do see. You do see tissue fluidization, but the collective cell movement is quite different. And so I'm still looking at that right now.
How do you actually measure this bulk viscosity?
So for this, okay. So this is quite crude in the way I I measured this, I could. So basically you have, you treat this collection of cells as a sphere moving through a viscous fluid. And so you have, so basically it's the slope of this line is the viscosity. Sorry, yeah. Any other questions? Yes. Oh, no, that's right. Yeah, a Stokes equation for flow. Yes. Yes. So now you can make what I guess are crudely called point cell models, but with those you can't. So the reason why we coarse grain the cell is because we're interested in relating large scale phenomena to phenotypes that occur at the single cell level. So basically, we can phenomenologically mimic a phenotype occurring at the single cell level, such as cytoskeletal reconstruction, try to understand how this is regulated by the cell, and perhaps we can these patterns that we see on longer scales, on larger scales, we can then learn what the cell is in the real system is doing. So now you can't. It's hard to investigate. Single cell phenotypes in a point cell model.
Why can't you just infer the effective parameters in a single cell model after doing a number of simulations where you do all the finite elements within the cell so that you can relate one level to another in what is often called long length scale model?
So your question was why don't we do that? There's only so many hours in the day. No, I mean, so another student involved, working from a supervisor has done point cell models, but they you just our experience with them was that you just you don't get the type of cell behavior that you or the large scale behavior that you're interested in. You know, I like the new approach that Lisa has taken for modeling cells at a point cell level, and so you know we're currently trying to work with her in for this type of multi-scale understanding. Yes. Yes. Modify this. So basically you're saying a contractile. So how would it modify it? I haven't looked into that of trying to understand these. So you know, here we just assume that the cell when it feels a mechanical perturbation that it will. Start to reorganize its cytoskeleton, which we see in some measurements for certain cell types, but for other cell types they do contract, and so this is just an approximation that we made for this or a simplification that we made for this type of model. Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. No, I agree with you. Is there anything else? Okay. So I want to show you this type of large scale morphogenesis, which is shown in the chick embryo. So this is a current application which we are trying to apply the model to, and to, I guess, investigate how this is organized. Okay, so this is so in the top here you saw this flat sheet of cells, and the streak appeared, and that was the bright field, and this is just the fluorescent view of it, and here just marking the trajectories of these cells. And so you see this large scale flow here, and we are actually investigating mechanisms of chemotaxis and or mechanotaxis, or just spatial and temporal gene expression through, say, through a mechanism like convergence and extension. So this is a current application, but we haven't really learned anything yet. So I can't really show you any nice results from this quite yet. So this brings me to my conclusions for this. So cells and tissues are viscoelastic, solid-like, and fluid-like, depending on the time scale you observe them. The cell is an active material in which remodeling of the cytoskeleton and active migration result in the fluidization of tissues over long time scales, such as hours. So now this goofy picture of me is here because I just wanted to show you that we do some experiments with tissue mechanics. Yeah. So that's that's all I have for today. So thank you. I guess. I asked her politely. No, we did it. No. Yeah. Thanks. Any further?
If you actually take the viscosity you measure, and then assume that's enough, now closing assume that the simple fluid outside this thing that you're moving with balls. And so you can calculate the flow shape.
Yep.
Now, so the flow shape you observe, the way it looks like the outside.
Well, yes. Yeah, so I don't know the details of this calculation, so I can't do it for you here. But if you take a disk of fluid and you apply a force to it, what you see are large-scale vortices. And so the flow pattern that we saw in the model was similar, but it's a little bit different, and we're still trying to understand this because the vortices aren't as large scale as they appear in a Stokes flow simulation or Stokes flow calculation.
So they're larger or less large in the real in this simulation?
They're less large in the real in the multicellular simulation. My current thinking is effects of elastic compression. So, but I haven't completely understood it yet.
Adhesion between all the parts in the cells and the elastic connections are all the same along the surface and through.
I'm sorry.
You haven't done anything to check to make the surface the cell, but if you haven't done any others.
No, the interaction potentials are slightly different.
And the ones that are applying themselves on the surface.
Oh, no, they're all so
So if
all.
the active elements are predominantly cortical, for example, you'd expect them on the side of the cortical.
Yes, but we haven't made that type type of complex of a model yet. So basically, we just assume that all the elements within here have all the same type of interactions with elements.
Surface elements.
Yeah, so the surface elements and the inside elements, you know, could interact. I mean, they have the same interaction potential, but the proximity, you know, denies them the ability to interact
Yeah, I mean along the surface of the form.
Okay.
Is there is a cortex that is covered in the
No, we don't. All the elements are the same. Just very simple. We try to make it as simple as possible with that. Not yet, no. For that, we would these multicellular simulations like this with active migration, I've only done in two dimensions. So for something like you're saying, it would be more appropriate in three dimensions, where on a single processor, you know, we would like to look at a system of, say, a couple hundred of cells as opposed to thousands. But I mean, it's definitely a project that we're interested in trying out, but we just haven't done that yet. Is there another question? Okay. Oh, no, that, okay, so that was just for visualization.
Yeah, I know, but it knows. So the next step is you could actually
We definitely.
What about plant cells?
No,
That'd be useful.
no, no, we
You need to have a cell wall, that's what you need to
No,
have.
I mean, we definitely can make different types of elements within the same cell.
Right.
We just haven't done
Yeah.
that yet. No, it is.
You already know which cells are, which elements are on the surface, so you're halfway there.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was talking to, shoot, what's the Polish guy's name?
Pavel.
Pavel.